socialist, predatory and survivalist, spit heaven, fire from his lips, burn the same driver.
Listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge, but we as a people will turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. So that I get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to get involved in the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live audio at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream. At that location, you can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there playing also. You can go to abitumi.com. That's abitumi.com. They stream from Ghana and catch the live stream there, or you can download the TuneIn Radio app to any of your devices. TuneIn Radio is a free radio app in their TuneIn search engine. Just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you had the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, it's Time for an Awakening radio program with a live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, you can type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening media is also there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, or share with your friends, and also check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace in our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:07 here on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening, the Sunday, March 3rd edition of Time for an Awakening. Our guest this evening in conversation, activist, organizer, and president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association of Memphis, Mr. Tom Burrell, is with us this evening to give our listeners an update on the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association organized gatherings and meetings of black farmers and landowners around the Mason, Tennessee area and other southern states about the Blue Oval City project coming to Tennessee. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 7:12 here on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How you doing, sir?
Things are getting better. It's getting warmer. Hopefully, it'll stay that way on that realm. But in other areas, things are getting better. So that's a good thing. But I'm definitely looking forward to Mr. Burrell's update. I think people are. I'm hearing a little bit more and more about what's going on in Memphis in one way or another, Elliot. But I think it's important, that we get a better handle and how we can actually be more supportive to what Mr. Burrell is doing with the black landowners and farmers in that area.
Yeah, the last time we talked to Mr. Burrell, I think at the time they were starting the meetings they had started some around the Mason area in several of the neighboring towns. But I think he kind of started like a Southern tour to help black folks kind of organize tangled titles and things like that with their land so they could take advantage of what's going on around there. But that's why we bring Mr. Burrell on to kind of get an update on what's going on in that area of the country and just get an update for our listeners to find out what's going on. Our guest this evening in conversation, activist, organizer, and president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association of Memphis, Mr. Tom Burrell, is with us. Mr. Burrell, how you doing, sir?
I am doing quite fine. Can you hear me, Brother Elliot?
Loud and clear. I'm glad to have you back
okay,
on the program.
Okay, Brother Richard, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, and I'm looking forward to, as always, to engage and get the update from you. How are you?
We're doing fine, good health, and excellent spirits.
Mr. Burrell, the last time you were on, you were visiting like a lot of the neighboring towns. And when I say neighboring, I'm talking about maybe, a few miles away from the Blue Oval City, Mason, Nutbush, the different towns, Covington. But I think you had, were in the process of embarking on kind of like a Southern tour to help black folks, to inform them of what's going on around that area, to see if they want to get involved, and more importantly, to help them with their property, maybe a tangled title, multiple owners, and things of that nature that would stop them from getting involved. And plus, the major thing is to have them organize in one banner so they can take advantage of what's going on there. Can you kind of give us an update on some of the meetings and things like that, and how's it been going as far as organizing some of our farmers under the banner of taking advantage?
Brother Elliot, thank you again for allowing us to privilege this important platform. As you indicated, the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association is an advocacy association. We advocate, we argue, we plead. We stand in the gap for those who may not have the resources and the wherewithal to advocate and otherwise take advantage of opportunities that are available to people who own property in the agricultural community on the one hand, and B, to provide the advocacy, particularly the legal wherewithal, for those who may be the victims of the historical taking of that very commodity, i.e. land. Land, as you said, as we all know, is the nucleus. It is the foundation upon prosperity is dependent upon. We have been, the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association, we have a long and steep history in advocating for individuals who are in the farming and land owner heirship community. Most of our members, interestingly enough, are located outside of the South, in Michigan, in New York, in California. They are still heirs at law. They are the sons and the daughters of those who own property. Keep in mind, as we have said historically, if I could just put this in context, in 1910, 45 years after the passage of the 13th Amendment, African Americans had acquired, according to some estimates, over 20 million acres of land in Alabama, North Carolina, Virginia. I can go on and on, in what we call the original 13 or slave states. Today, we own less than 2 million acres of land. There are reports that we have lost over $320 billion in value and the value of land. One of the, and I love it, Brother Elliot, that you interject some spiritual context. And if I might paraphrase the gospel, one of my favorite verses regarding this land situation is in Deuteronomy 33:9. And God said, "They shall call the people to the mountain. There they shall offer sacrifices of righteousness key phrase, for they shall partake of the abundance of the seas and of the treasures hid in the sand. And I used to ask myself that latter, what do you mean treasures hid in the sand? 4,000 years ago, we know now what God meant. There was oil in the desert. There was oil in the sand. We didn't understand its importance at that time, not that you and I were here. But as my grandmother would say, when we do the right thing, we are eligible for what's called goodies. A goodie is something extra. What God was telling the children of Israel, if you do right, not only will the land flow with milk and honey, but I have some goodies in it. There are some other things that in time past for this generation and future generations to be able to benefit from. And so when we hear African Americans owning land still in the South, originally we are talking about tobacco and cotton and soybeans and rice. But now that corporate America is moving from the Midwest and the North, as it were, smack dab into Virginia, into Tennessee and Alabama. Over the last 15 or 20 years, over 30 corporations now, particularly doing business in the automobile industry, have moved smack dab into our backyards. To me, this is another treasure, as it were, a benefit of owning property. But to your point, Elliot, to your point, Brother Richard, we own our property, or in such a matter, it is kind of convoluted. It is difficult for us to be able to leverage our property because we own it as what is referred to as, among other things, heir property, heirs at law, meaning grandma, granddaddy, that 20 million acres or the 5 million or 2 million that we still have. They died without wills. They died without trust agreements. And they were not aware of the consequences of not having wills and clearly defined documents as to who would inherit, key phrase, inherit the land. And therefore, when they died without wills, they had six, they had seven, 10, 12, 15 children. Many of them have passed on now, and they left five and six children. So now the pie doesn't get any larger. The slices get smaller and smaller. So now that we have these corporations moving literally in our backyards now, from Michigan, Ford, Stellantis, our companies coming from Korea, Kia, Mercedes-Benz, Hyundai, I can go on and on and on. We know the story. They are willing now and are in need of doing business with landowners. And black folk now have a commodity. Unlike when we went to Detroit and we went to Ohio and Indiana back in the 40s and 50s and 60s to work for the automobile industry, the only capital, the only resources that we had was our labor, our physical hands. Now, as God has said, there are treasures hid in the sand with the land that we own. So in addition to our children getting jobs at these automobile and other corporate entities, those of us who are landowners who may be past the day of being able to do the 8-to-5 or the 9-to-5, but we can now benefit from the ownership of that precious commodity upon which here again land. And so what we're doing at the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association, to your point, we're not only traveling here in Tennessee because of Ford, but we're going to Alabama. We're going to North Carolina, Mercedes-Benz. We're going to Texas, General Motors. We're going to hither. We're going to thither. And we're going to yon, where we still own property, to do, among other things, to make sure that members in our community understand how important it is to disentangle, to straighten out this mess, to straighten out this air property. And I'm going to pause at this point and allow you all to, and thank you for allowing me to be a little lengthy, but I just wanted to kind of lay the platform there and the foundation upon which we are doing currently.
Yeah, Mr. Burrell, what's been, I'm just curious, because I've seen some photos of some of the meetings that you had in the different states, and it looked like hundreds of people there. What's been the response of the people that have been coming out? Are they prepared to move forward? Are a lot of them, I wouldn't say complaining, but are a lot of them talking about we want to get involved, but our property is tangled? What has been the response? I'm just curious.
Yes. For the last, shall we say, 50 or 60 years, the African-American community, we are aware of this problem called air property. But there's no question, when we talk about doing something about a problem, it requires basically two fundamental principles, and that is strategy dealing with what to do. Most of us will understand there's a problem. We know we've got a problem. The quote-unquote real problem is understanding the tactics, and it is how to fix it, okay? Requires a different set of skills or understanding. We know, to your point, yeah, we have this problem. The question is, how do we fix it? One of the things that we're suggesting is, and to your point, yes, they are interested. What do we need to do? The first thing we're saying is, since mama, since granddaddy died without a will, we can't solve that problem, okay? We can't solve the fact that they died without the will. Let me rephrase that. We can fix, though, this problem. This problem is solvable. Now what we have to do, though, it requires getting the family members together and to agree that we need to solve the problem. There are several tools. As I say, when we talk about tactics, we're talking about, well, when we say strategy, strategy says we're going to go from point A to point B. We're going from New York to L.A. The question is, what mode or modes of transportation? That's the tactics. Are we going to take a bus? Are we going to take a plane? Are we going to drive a car? Or are we going to do X, Y, and Z to get us from A to B? This is basically the problem we're having. We know we need to go from A to B. The question is now, what are the tools? What are the platforms? What are the modes now to do it, doing this? One of the modes that we are suggesting is that you, quote unquote, incorporate the property. We're going now, let's say the family owns 100 acres for all intents and purposes, and there were four children originally. That means they don't own 25 acres. They basically own one-fourth of every acre, and that's what makes it air property. And to the extent that one of those four now has passed on, and now we may be at a 1/24th fraction, what's called an undivided fractional interest. So what we need to do now is to do just that. Incorporate, that will involve transferring your fractional interest in the land to a corporate entity. Let's say if the property is called the Doe family. John and Sarah Doe died and had 100 acres. Now we're going to call that the Doe Farm. So we're going to incorporate the Doe Farm, and now if you have a 1/24th interest, you transfer that 1/24th interest to the Doe Corporation, LLC. At some point in time now, we've gone from the state telling us how to manage the property to now we are using basically corporate law, and we can decide now how to solve these problems. In other words, the Ford Motor Companies, the General Motors, the XY corporations coming to town, they're not going to be able to take advantage of, or we won't be able to take advantage of, the plethora of opportunities until we solve this problem. Corporations tend to do business with corporations. A corporation is seldom going to do business with an unincorporated entity. And our property is an unincorporated, meaning we don't know who the owners are. So now let's identify the owners, transfer, and this is just one mode. There are others. We make no claim to have exhausted the list of possibilities, but this is one method by which we can solve this problem. So yes, A, we know that there's a problem. The question is now, are we willing to do B, and that is to create these corporate entities to solve the problem? And the answer is also, yes, we are.
Yeah, Mr. Burrell, before I pass it over to Richard, I see with that the Blue Oval City, I guess Ford or whatever, kind of called you to a meeting. I know that they know what's going on. I know that they know that you're organizing a lot of the men and women who are landowners, that black men and women who are landowners down there. What, without revealing a lot of the things, what have they been requesting or saying to you in reference to the landowners there in some of the meetings?
Yes. Well, here again, thank you for that. Now, I'm sorry for cutting you off. Did you finish your statement? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What they are saying is they recognize, A, that the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association is a viable institution. Here you have a corporation, Ford Motor Company, that sells roughly $150 billion worth of products every year. They are a major corporation. And for that major corporation to recognize the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association as a viable entity speaks volumes about, first and foremost, that we think we are on the right path, okay, in terms of our advocacy. What the Ford corporations and others are saying is, we're moving to your community. We need land. They are investing about $6 billion with the B, dollars of their own money. The federal government, the Biden administration, made them another loan of $9 billion to invest in the EV battery plant. So you're talking $12, $15 billion project. It is going to be the largest automobile assembly plant in the country. So now we're going to, they know that there are some eminent domain issues. There's no way you can come to the rural community in cotton fields and with land that has been basically in the agricultural community and create an infrastructure. When they call it Blue Oval City, think about it. That name in and of itself implies mega growth. So we're talking about not only the Ford facility, but there are terms now that we hear in the automobile industry called OEMs. That's an original equipment manufacturer. Most corporations now, automobile corporations, and you have about 14 major subsidiaries, Ford, Stellantis, Toyota, BMW, et cetera, Volkswagen being the largest. They're the OEMs. They sub work out now to what they call tier one, tier two, and tier three suppliers. These are the people who are going to make all of the parts. The average automobile now will have 10, if not 20,000 parts. So your Fords don't make 20,000 parts. What they do is subcontract these opportunities out. Hint, to other corporate entities and allow them to pre-assemble or kitting and package these parts, these components, the seats, the engines, the transmissions, the wheels, the suspension. And then these other tier two groups bring these parts or send these parts to an assembly plant. The assembly plant may have 10,000 workers in it, but for every worker inside the assembly plant, you will have 10 perhaps outside to put these other thousands of parts together. Meaning, therefore, if Ford is going to move in your community to build the assembly plant, they're also going to make sure that those other suppliers, those tier two people, the Goodyear people with the tires, the TRW folks who are making the engines and all of these other 10,000 parts, they're going to need facilities, A, but more importantly, they're going to need places for their employees to stay. So now you've gone from an open field, as it were, one day to houses, hotels, restaurants, service stations, warehouses, schools, hospitals, literally creating a city. Multiply that here again times 30, as it were. That is to say, communities in Tennessee, communities in Alabama, communities in Georgia, will also benefit by the same degree of explosive growth now that this Ford plant represents in this little town called Mason, Tennessee, and Stanton, Tennessee, with 200 inhabitants. The towns that they move to basically will have less than 500 individuals. So now we're talking about what they call collateral opportunities, ancillary opportunities to spill over to the community at large, and they're going to need to make sure that they are quarterbacking, for the lack of a better phrase. So they're going to contact and work with organizations like the Black Farmers Association, because a lot of the land that is owned around and adjacent and contiguous to these facilities are owned by African Americans with air property. And here again, the stories and all of the challenges that go with that. So, yes, the fact that they're recognizing our organization is a vindication of sorts that what we have been advocating for the last 25 years. We know a lot of people say, well, I'm in it because I heard there was going to be a lawsuit. And there are lawsuits, but that's another mode of benefit, as it were. But there are other modes or tactics that we want to move to now for the benefit of the next generation and talk about generational wealth.
Richard? Uh-oh.
Oh, here I go. Okay. I got lost, Mr. Burrell, because I was looking at your organizational chart and in relationship to the Black Farmers Association. And you had mentioned already about strategy or what and tactics how. And I was trying to think through how to raise this question, because the questions that Elliot has raised is the work that from the last time we've been together, you know, in organizing and communicating specifically around the potential of wealth creation, which goes to the strategy. What can be done in this moment, right? And how the Black Farmers Association can be helpful in that, as an organization, in that wealth creation because of these corporations coming down. So one thing that I wanted to know, the people within Tennessee and the outlying area that you've been going to, has this moment inspired them as something, as a wealth creator, you know, a wealth creation moment for those at least who have the property, and those who are heirs to the property? Do you have the sense that people recognize what the Black Farmers Association is communicating, that this is another historical moment, just like I put it in mind as Reconstruction, as far as a wealth creation moment? Is that the energy that exists based off of your movement around?
That's an excellent question, Brother Richard. And here's how I would answer that. You ask, are they inspired? Are they inspired? Yes. One of the things that we think that is a force multiplier of inspiration is the mere fact that you are blessed, as I said earlier, with a multi-billion-dollar corporation coming to your community. But here's the challenge, is leadership. And that is to the point, if the Ford Motor Corporations, and let's say Ford represents all of these other corporations, whether it be automobile, recognizes that an association like BFA, the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association, has influence with its members, number one. We're not talking about suing Ford. We're not talking about filing a lawsuit, because we know that's one of the things that we do. Historically, the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association has been known for suing the Department of Agriculture for the last 25 years, and we've been able to directly or indirectly get over $5 billion to our members as a result of being discriminated against in credit and lending by the Department of Agriculture. So I want to put a pin there, but it's important that I put that pin there. Now, here you have, now this is a government agency that has been sued by the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association on the one hand. Now you have a corporate entity coming to town and says, well, guess what? I may need to work with that very same organization now because its members are in possession of a commodity, i.e. land. We don't intend to discriminate against them and be a victim of a discrimination suit, in the main at least. We want to quote-unquote partner, which is the essence of what we represent in the first place. There's an old saying, though, whatever man ought to do, he ought to be made to do. The reason we're suing USDA, if I might step out of limb, is because they didn't do what they ought to have done, and that is to treat black landowners fairly. So if a corporate entity coming along saying, well, hey, we're willing to treat you fairly, now our members, to your point, they may be somewhat reticent and hesitant because up to this point, everybody has tried to take your what? Advantage of them. Now you're going to have an association or some leadership component to come in to explain to them now that, yeah, as Dr. Booker T. Washington would say, we ought not to allow our grievances to overshadow our opportunities. So for the first 20 or 25 years, BIFA has been dealing with grievances. You have been done wrong. You have been discriminated against. Now we're saying to our members, here is an opportunity. Now let's not allow this opportunity to not be taken advantage of because of the grievance. That's where, in my opinion, leadership comes. And to your point, Richard, that is a challenge. You're not going to expect them now to just flip the page, as it were, in one meeting or one setting. It's going to take some time. But people are coming around. And the more, one of the selling points that we are making as well is how often now do you get a multi-billion dollar corporation? What we're explaining to our members is that Ford represents a larger industry. When we add up the sales for Ford Motor Company and Volvo and Toyota and Nissan, I can go on and on. Those 14 major conglomerates with their 65 different brands, we're talking about a $2 trillion with the T, a true $2 trillion industry that just moved to town through the, shall we say, representation of a Ford. So Ford coming to your community, Nissan going to Alabama, Toyota going to Georgia, so forth, so on and up to, we're now talking about, when we look at this collective of black folk, a $2 trillion industry is moving to town. If that's not a once-in-a-generational opportunity, I don't know what is. Now what we're saying is, in addition to creating jobs for people to work on the line, we now want to be able to become partners with these corporate entities and become their tier. In other words, they already have tier one suppliers. And those tier one suppliers are going to need to work with tier two and tier three suppliers. Now, rather than producing cotton and soybeans and tobacco, you have an opportunity now to be a producer of seats, to be a producer now of bumpers and brakes and cylinders and pistons and tires and rims and so forth and so on and so up to. Is that going to change overnight? Of course not. But we are making ground to this extent. We still have some black folk who own their land, what is called, they did incorporate. We have some black families who have incorporated, are incorporating, and that is also going to help us to help to allay, for the lack of a better phrase, some of the fears and hesitation that would otherwise, and justifiably so, be, shall we say, present in a community that has been taken advantage of for 400 years.
And the question comes to mind, and I was going to, you know, and looking at your organizational chart, the tactical aspect of it, and the different, I would take it, the eight different components within the organization for the wealth creation as you lay out the strategic purpose of wealth creation. But the question comes to mind in relationship to the tier two and tier three. Are the people within the surrounding towns of this movement by the corporations, this industry, the car industry and the support industries that are to it, are they politically aroused of the economic and wealth potential that is happening, which would add credence or give more support to, you know, the Black Farmers Association? Are the Elliot had laid out the numbers of towns the last time he was here, and the ones that were over 50% as far as population. So I'm trying to get, you know, for us understanding whether are the those towns, because then we get into assistance of the politics, are they recognizing that this is a moment, an economic moment that they should be organizing around from your perception and moving around?
Yes, again, that's an excellent question. They are. The question is on what level, though? Mm-hmm. Is that when I say level, at level one, when a corporation, any corporation says, I'm coming to town, the first thing people would think is, how is that going to affect my taxes? Okay. In other words, my house now, and we have a lot of questions regarding it. Ford just moved next door to me, and now they have a $10 billion project. My house is worth $100,000 now, or $200,000, or $300,000. But the taxes are going to go up and make that house almost, I may have to sell it. That's a realistic concern. The other issue, to your point, is eminent domain. A lot of folks are saying, well, wait a minute. This corporation now, if it's building a city, and most of the roads here are two-lane roads and gravel roads, they're going to need four-lane highways. That means now the state is going to need land, eminent domain. Are they going to take some of my property? Will my child be able to get a job in the plant? These are basically your historical questions. But to your point specifically, Richard, no. They are not aware of the overall collateral opportunities, the multi-billion dollars that will accrue to them if they partner with these corporations. They're not at the partnering stage. They don't understand that at this point. Think about it now. When we left the South, whether we left Georgia and North Carolina going to the shipyards there in Philadelphia, whether we left South Carolina and going, shall we say, to the plants in Massachusetts, when we left Alabama going to Detroit, when we left Texas and Louisiana going to L.A., we were simply looking for a job, as I said earlier. So historically, our relationship with corporations has been one of a worker and an employer. Now, going back to that verse in Deuteronomy, one of the goodies now, when these corporations are moving back to us, we have a commodity now that we didn't have when we left Alabama going to Detroit. When we left Alabama going to work for Ford, all we had was basically our hands, okay, and our back, as it were. Now, when Ford moves back to Alabama, Tennessee, Ford is saying, wait a minute, not only do I need labor, but I also need to work with you and partner with you with land. We had no idea when we went to Michigan, Ford already had land. It was the only real estate we were concerned about was an apartment. So now the dynamics are relatively new. So no, there's not a lot of history here with Black folks having an appreciation from being a partner now with Ford or General Motors or Toyota or Mercedes-Benz, other than being an employee. This is where an association like DEFA now is going to have to come in to explain those other collateral opportunities, these other modes now. The first mode, the tactic was to provide labor when we went to Detroit. That was basically it. There was no other. Now, other folk provided parts. Other folks provided land. But we didn't. Black folk didn't do that. So this is the first time that the African-American community has had an opportunity now to partner with a multi-billion-dollar corporation with a commodity other than, quote-unquote, labor. I'm not belittling labor. Don't get me wrong. But now, as that verse in Deuteronomy say, we have another commodity. There's a treasure hid in the sand. There's another goodie. Now, if we've never been exposed to these other goodies, of course not. They're not going to be able to develop an appreciation for it in the first instance. This is where organizations like BIFA and other black organizations should now come on board and say, now let's talk about some other opportunities that heretofore was not even relevant in the African-American community, i.e. now partnering with corporate America, with warehouses, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, Elliot, you know, Mr. Burrell and Elliot, you know, this discussion just stimulates so much, you know, so many questions, and I hate to barrage you in this moment, and we'll continue the dialogue, because one thing thought comes to me before, as you mentioned, about how the labor movement at a different period in time, moving to the north to the industrial area where they were just getting a job, there was that movement, and I'm wondering if that move, that migration of the skill or, you know, the technical skills, the, you know, not necessarily the skill to do the battery work, but the say, the legal, the accounting, the public policy, of people seeing that this is an economic opportunity to make that migration back down south and to assist in BIFA being able to deal with the development and capturing that wealth creator that's going on, that these corporations, that's the migration aspect is one thing that comes to my mind. But I'll ask this, and I asked this before, is the legacy organizations, and particularly, and you gave a particular answer before, and I'm just updating to see, has there been any movement? Are the Fisk in Knoxville and Lane, the HBCUs assisting along with the communication, the black communication networks, assisting and informing or creating the motivation and education around? Are they gravitating to BIFA to assist in taking advantage of this wealth-creating moment?
Brother Elliot, I knew you were going to ask me a question that was going to put me on the spot. Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Oh, man, you really put me on the spot. But I have to be, as I think was said with in the, was it Hamlet, above all, that I don't self be truth. I have to be realistic. And it's not, the answer is no. Okay. And I'm saying no at the level that's commensurate.
Mr. Burrell.
At the level that's commensurate to take advantage of the opportunity. Yes, they are there. But keep in mind, this is new to them. This is new to black land-grant colleges. We didn't have black land-grant colleges in Michigan and Detroit, did we? Now, if you had asked that question of the University of Michigan, Michigan State, Wayne State, and Detroit, the answer would be resoundingly yes. Now, if we were to go to Morehouse, if we were to go to Spelman, if we were to go to Hampton, the answer would still be no, because they never had. We were relegated, for the most part, in the what? South. So we never had any exposure with multi-corporations like Ford and General Motors. There would be no curriculum at Lane College. There wouldn't be any curriculum, basically, at the colleges that you made reference to, other than the engineering schools and the accounting schools. Yes, let's give them the benefit of that. But in terms of now taking those engineers and say, now, rather than go to Ford and draft these parts, now let's take your engineering skills and become a sub-3, tier 2, as it were, contractor. No, those conversations are not being had because historically they were not there. one of the benefits, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn, is that allowed me to develop an appreciation when I heard the Ford was coming, is I used to work for the automobile industry in Michigan. I went to school in Michigan. So I'm very familiar with that culture, okay? So the minute I heard that Ford was coming to town, I wasn't more or less, and I just thank God that I'm also the president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association, but I grew up on a farm in Tennessee, but I, like most folks, migrated to the Midwest. My family went to Detroit, to Flint, to Saginaw, to Cleveland, to Indianapolis, to work in the automobile industry. I just decided 50 years ago, after working there for 10, after I graduated from college there, and after I worked at the automobile industry for about 10 years, I decided to come back south to get into agriculture. But my point is, were it not for and but for my exposure on that end, my antennas would not have gone up or been elevated. I would have been thinking like everybody else, oh, no, here comes a Ford plant. How many people are they going to need to work for them? But I was familiar with the tier two suppliers. I was familiar with the collateral opportunities. And if you've never been exposed to it, how would you know how to basically do it? So to their credit, the answer is no. Let's just hope, though, that they will come on board. And as I said, to the extent that they are coming, it's basically the labor component. They wanted to make sure now you're going to hire this person, hire that person. All of that's fine. But you don't create but the generational wealth now is, I don't know anybody who can leave a job to talk about generational wealth. A job is basically what I'm going to have. But generational wealth is what I'm going to, what business am I going to be able to invest in that my son or my daughter can take over? And that is to say, if I'm a tier one supplier and my corporation is Secondary Automobile Incorporated and I'm selling parts to General Motors, then I don't have to, going back to the wheels again, all I have to do is wheel that to my children. I don't need Ford's permission to let my son or daughter work for me. I don't need Chrysler's permission. When we look at other minorities coming to this country, most of the jobs that they will have, whether it's the hotel industry or the service station industry or the hair care industry or the food industry, those jobs are transferable to their children without anybody else's permission. That's where generational wealth comes in, is an opportunity for you to be in a business that automatically lends itself after your passing, after your demise, or after you're retiring, to automatically be available to your son and your daughter without your customer's permission.
You know, I must be missing something, because this seems like an exciting moment. And for these institutions, and I'm thinking of the communication and the colleges not being online, not even recognizing, well, BIFA is out there. I hear what he's saying. I hear what Ms. Borrell is saying. Let's send somebody out there to see, to investigate more. It would seem that would just be a natural instinct, understanding what you say, Mr. Borrell. Elliot, I just, maybe I'm missing something here. Y'all have to help me out.
Well, maybe we'll get to the bottom of it as we move forward in conversation. Mr. Borrell, I'm going to shift gears a little bit, because you mentioned that the Black Farmers and Agricultural Association was always involved in advocacy, but now this is an opportunity to rally the people to take advantage of this economic boom that's coming to that area where black folks own a lot of the land. Let's go to the advocacy part again, because here we see a tie-in. Now, you got black folks that own a lot of that land in where this Blue Oval City is going to be operating, and some of the ancillary businesses just going to be developed. But after black folks incorporate, they're going to need funds. And this is where you've been fighting on that front, among others. The lawsuit that's in United States District Court now in reference to the money from the American Rescue Plan, where the money was put in, and it was the Inflation Reduction Act that it was taken out. Do I have them twisted, or I have it right?
No, you're correct.
Okay. Now, the money was put in the beginning, the $5 billion or a little bit more that was going towards land loss the land loss.
Eminent domain. Yeah.
Well, in several states, white farmers organized and put in lawsuits to block it.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden the banks, some of the major banks that do a lot of the farm loans, went to the government or the Biden administration and told them that, well, we're not interested in giving debt relief to black farmers. So then all of a sudden here the money disappears, is taken out. When some folks squawked about it to a degree, and I don't think personally that a lot of black media really got on board with that, because the double cross, it was obvious and it was blatant. So now you see that they put $2.2 billion back into this Inflation Reduction Act, but they make it available to all farmers, which waters it down. It doesn't go to the farmers who have been historically discriminated against and their rights have been constantly violated. So when you have a project coming to that area where it's a good chance that even though the black farmers own the land, which is very much collateral, that they might need other funds to be infused where they would have to apply for farm loans and things of that nature because they're farmers. How can this, talk about that lawsuit that you have filed against the United States government in reference to what they did in, as far as discrimination and that money that was supposed to have been allocated.
Yes, excellent question again, Brother Elliot. You talk about advocacy, and then we talked about strategy and tactics. Tactics meaning, you know, what the day-to-day part of it. What vehicle are you going to use to get us from A to B? The vehicles now, one of those other vehicles, in addition to lawsuits, is also the loans and grants, because at the core, at the crux of the lawsuits, we didn't sue USDA just because we didn't like them. We sued them because they were denying black farmers loans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They were denying them credit. One of the ways you stop a group from achieving real estate, remember we said at the outset, you had 925,000 black farmers in 1920, almost a million, who had acquired 20 million acres. Now, here's the key. Black folks didn't bring 20 million acres from Africa. We didn't have the deeds to 20 million acres. We did that after a relatively short period of time of, shall we say, doing Jim Crow. What was it that allowed these black farmers to acquire 20 million acres? Once he had citizenship rights, and he was farming all along. That was the reason you brought black folks over here to farm, right? To work the white man's farm. He was not a citizen at that point. He could not lawfully own property. So therefore, that he was a farmer, but he was farming for someone else. His success allowed the other person to acquire land. However, after the 13th Amendment, and particularly the Civil Rights Act of 1866, 1 year after the 13th Amendment, the black man who was farming now, as it were, for Mr. Charlie, can now farm for himself. All right? And now the proceeds of that farming accrues to him. He went from zero ownership of land at the eve of the passage of the 13th Amendment until 45 years later owning 20 million acres. According to a lot of statistics, between 1900 and 1910, black folks bought on a per capita basis 8% more land than white folks. Now, where am I going here? meaning land was a function of farming. In other words, the more I farm, the more I'm in a position to own farmland. So now if I want to stop you from owning farming land, the best thing to do is to stop you from quote-unquote farming. The best way to stop you from farming is to deny you the credit, to deny to your point. So therefore, credit was what stopped black folks from farming. It's not they just woke up one day and said, you know what, we're just going to move up the truck and move to Chicago. No, he loaded up the truck and moved to Chicago because now you stopped allowing him to have access to credit. There are a lot of people in Philadelphia. There are a lot of black folk in Detroit. There are a lot of black folks in New York would not have left South Carolina, would not have left North Carolina and Georgia and Tennessee if they had received adequate business loans. Am I making sense? Therefore, the next set of advocacy is how do we now take advantage of this next platform of opportunities, i.e. working with the Ford Motor Company, as it were, even after we straighten out the deeds on this 100 acres that I talked about. So you're right. We have at least another challenge. We have A, working with the African-American community to help them to solve the internal problem. But once he comes to us, he says, well, you know what? Now we have a clear deed of title to our 100 acres. We've incorporated. Now what's the next step? He still or she will still need to have access to capital. So now we have to, the black farmers and agriculturalists, has to make sure that the local banks now, the local credit unions, are not going to do him or her the same way that the Department of Agriculture did. This is why, again, why you need an association like BIFA. You need to have an association that's going to make sure that the airway, as it were, the journey, as it said, from A to B, we're going to cross over to this territory. We're going to cross into that territory. That's why when people, the 49ers, as it were, when they left Boston in their covered wagons going to L.A. to the gold rush, they were going to go through hostile territory. So they needed a guide. They needed wagon trains to be associated with for protection. The military had to go so far and establish ports and forts and places of refuge for safety. We're in that same journey as African Americans. We're coming out, as it were. So now we're going from location A to location B, generational wealth. But along the way, to your point, there are some banks, white banks, who are going to discriminate against black farmers. But here's the other sad scenario. There are some black banks who are not going to let him have a loan either, gentlemen. Now what do we do? So inherent, if you look at our platform again, those things that we need to do, one of the things that the African-American community, particularly those who are concerned with generational wealth, we're going to have to create our own commercial banking institution for, if no other reason, to make sure now that the other, we own roughly $40 billion. If we straighten out the air problem, that land is worth about $40 billion. However, if I can't leverage that $40 billion, it's almost worth nothing, as it were. So if white banks are going to discriminate against us on the one hand, USDA is going to discriminate against us on the other hand, and black banks are not going to do anything on the other, we only have one other choice, and that is we have to do certain things for ourselves. But you're right. That's a part of the advocacy component.
Listen, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation. You can get involved, too, with a question or comment by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Our guest this evening in conversation, activist, organizer, and president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association in Memphis, Mr. Tom Burrell. Again, join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. IBBToMe.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. IBBToMe.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global Commits You Black family. To join your interconnected Commits You Black communities, escape the digital plantation now. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
A new era, a new phase of the struggle, where we have moved from a struggle for decency, which characterized our struggle for 10 or 12 years, to a struggle for genuine equality. And this is where we're getting the resistance, because there was never any intention to go this far. People were reacting to Bull Connor and to Jim Clark rather than acting in good faith for the realization of genuine equality.
Do you think white people in this country, and I'm talking about non-segregationists, people devoid or thinking they're devoid of racism, do you have any idea of what they want the Negro to be in America?
I think the vast majority of white Americans will go but so far. It's a kind of installment plan for equality, and they are always looking for an excuse to go but so far.
And know that this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. See, brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community, to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda.
Whites are expert game players in their contests to maintain absolute power. One of their time-honored gimmicks is to point to individual blacks who've achieved recognition. But look at Ralph Bunche. Think about Lena Horne or Mary Anderson. Look at Jackie Robinson. They made it as one of those who has made it. I would like to be thought of as an inspiration to our young, but I don't want them lied to. Name them for me. The examples of blacks who made it. For virtually everyone you name, I can give you a sordid piece of factual information on how they have been mistreated, humiliated. Not being able to fight back is a form of severe punishment.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood.
For an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:15 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Our guest this evening in conversation, activist, organizer, and president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association of Memphis, Mr. Tom Burrell, is with us in conversation. Giving us an update on some of the organized gatherings and meetings with black farmers and landowners around the Mason, Tennessee, and several southern states around this blue oval city that's coming to Tennessee, and how they can take advantage of the economic boom that's going to happen in that area. You can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Mr. Burrell, you talked about before we broke about the contingency or the fight that's constantly going on about the access to capital that have been denied black farmers, and which was the major reason that a lot of the land loss occurred, along with forcing them off properties and terrorism. One of the major things was the denial of money to run a farm and to keep the land. It kind of dovetails on what Richard asked earlier about the contribution, and not just the colleges down there lending expertise to maybe the development of the ancillary or the partnering technology that's needed, but just the organizing contribution that they can have as far as alerting the people to what's going on. And I'm not just talking about, because Richard mentioned the legacy organizations. The onus falls squarely in the lap of black leadership in those areas. And in fact, nationally, because just like you said, a lot of people that own land in the southern states have moved to northern areas. So I'm not going to just put it on black leadership in Tennessee or in Mississippi or in places like that. This onus falls on black leadership, period, across the country. And the black clergy to a degree, to organize the people to what is going on, how they can take advantage of this, helping them, even if they don't have the legal means, either directing them towards an organization such as yourself that is helping the people to untangle these titles, that have lawyers that work along with the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association to aid the people. It needs to be help involved in this, because these things can help our people control the economy of their community. Because if you look at the major cities where we dwell, we don't control the economy of our areas. I don't care whether you're talking about in the north or in the south. Other people come in and control the economy of black communities. And to be honest, that is what Ford intends to do in that area, even though black folks own the land. They basically want to dictate what comes to the land and basically control the economy of the black community. They don't want black folks controlling the economy of their communities. And I think that's what the fear is, Richard, to at least black elected officials getting involved. They don't want to become in the crosshairs of a lot of these banks and some of these powerful organizations, whether they're white farmers or whatever, because some of them are tied politically. And a lot of them, if they want to reach office again, they need money from these banks. So they don't want to anger any people or come in the crosshairs. But see, when you do that, you put your people at a disadvantage. You shouldn't be out there, Mr. Burrell, fighting this fight. Just you and the dedicated members of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association. When you have black leadership and powerful black leadership, like the guy in Mississippi, Benny Thompson, you shouldn't. I bet you he haven't even mentioned anything about this to any of his constituents. I haven't heard anything nationally, unless you heard something locally. Some of the most powerful black. This is a disgrace. And it deals on what you were talking about, Richard. The critical question is, why? Why haven't you talked about this to your constituents? The Biden administration, the Democratic Party, has just, according to Mr. Burrell, gave $9 billion to Ford to basically help them generate infrastructure around that Blue Oval City that black people own land around. So why aren't your politicians talking about this to you people? We got to wake up. Some of these people are not working in our interests. They might be black. And some of our people are ready to wave pom-poms when they get in office. Oh, look at Richard. He's the first black this. Oh, look at Elliot. He's this and that. But they're not interested in the welfare and generational wealth being developed among our people. They might be interested in their own generational wealth. But that's not why they're in office. I didn't want to get on no pedestal, no podium, Mr. Burrell, because, it's up to you to kind of let us know what's going on. But I just needed to say that because it's in reference to the question Richard asked, and it really bothers me that a project. This is a major endeavor for this country to start developing electric technology in vehicles to get away from fossil fuels because they said it's been polluting the air. So this is major. And they're going to an area where black folks own the land. So I just want to just throw that in there, and then I'm going to go to a couple callers, and maybe they want to weigh in on this issue too. Go ahead, Mr. Burrell.
Well, you said something, though, Brother Elliot, I think is the foundation of fear. We know that the average elected official in the black community will not have the financial wherewithal to finance a campaign if he or she were to anger the political establishment. They could not get reelected. The political establishment, and this is not an excuse, this is just what I'm saying, they know that the political establishment will run someone against them. Mm-hmm. So the best way for them to keep their job is to keep their mouth, is to hold their nose and look the other way. And that's what you have going on here, okay? When you talk about the African-American community losing 15 million acres of land over the last 100 years, and that didn't get any attention. When we are talking about losing $326 billion over the last 100 years, and if that has not gotten attention, there's something else at play here, and you made reference to it, and we need to be honest about it. the political system owns our political leaders. It's just that simple. If I'm a Democrat, I belong to that franchise. It's almost like owning a McDonald's or a Burger King. Once I say I'm going to get a McDonald's franchise, I got to get my lettuce from a certified McDonald's produce person. I can't just buy my tomatoes from my cousin. I can't buy the beef, as it were. I'm a part now of the franchise. Does that make sense? So when I say I'm a Democrat, I got to buy, or a Republican, I have to buy into that franchise. And if that franchise doesn't want me talking about economic development, guess what I'm not going to talk about? I'm not going to talk about economic development. We have to remember now, we talk about rights in this country. Property rights are basically different from, shall we say, accommodation. Most of our political leaders are into accommodation. You can sit next to this person. I can make sure you work over here. I can make sure you work over there. But you are a consumer. Now we're starting to, but here again, generational wealth, we're past a consumer now. You can't consume your way into generational wealth. You have to be an entrepreneur. You have to be a businessman or a businesswoman. And if the party has, shall we say, traded that out of our community. Now, to that point, when other minorities come to our community, don't you think they already know that I can come to South Philly, I can come to Detroit, I can go to Memphis and open up my hair care salon from Korea, I can open up a service station, I can open up a hotel? You actually think they've made a risk before they left India, before they left Saudi Arabia, or before they left Korea? No. They were guaranteed. They knew that when I come to the African-American community, I am not going to have any competition because the banks in that area are not going to allow the African-American hair care salon to have a loan. Will not allow the black service stations to have a loan. Will not allow the black hotel owner to get a loan. The black community, that got traded off. Where were our leaders when that trade was made, sir? They were in the room. But for the reason that we just mentioned, they couldn't say anything. I won't say anything because their positions will be up for quote-unquote trade. This is why I said earlier, if we're going to succeed, you know, you're not going to get a loan from the USDA, you're not going to get a loan from the white bank, and you're not getting loans from black banks. Trust me, it's harder to get a commercial loan from a black bank than it is from a white bank. At least USDA discriminated against us. That means they gave us some money. It wasn't enough. Black banks are not going to give you, quote unquote, to paraphrase God, any money. Since we're talking about, you know, getting on our soapbox, brother, we all have a soapbox to get on. But until we know now, wait a minute, the evidence is out. For our last 100 years, if they're not going to do for us, we have to do for our quote-unquote self, and we have the resources. We have $40 billion tied up in land. We are a $100 billion economy. It's a matter of deciding that we're going to have to do for ourselves. It's not that we're not capable. We just have to we've got to have that come to Jesus meeting and say, hey, y'all, wait a minute. This is what we've got to do, which is what I'm telling heirs. You got to have that conversation with your family. This is what we got to do. The solution is within the community. It's a matter of making that call and making that decision.
I hope people are listening.
Yeah, listen, we're in conversation tonight with activist organizer and president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association in Memphis, Mr. Tom Burrell. Talking about the organized gatherings and meetings that he's been having with black farmers and landowners around the Mason, Tennessee area, and also several southern states around this Blue Oval City project that's coming to Mason. Let's go to some of these calls. Let's go to Holly Springs, and I think this is my brother Rodney Lowe, brother Dubsack. Is this you?
Yes, sir. How y'all doing this evening?
All right, sir.
Well, I was just listening. Quite informative. Just go to that piece I was talking earlier about the politicians and how they're selling us out. I say it every day around here. They are definitely selling us out for a check or a career. And they're afraid of of their white counterparts. I think they believe in white supremacists to the utmost. They believe they have to be in close proximity with white people. White people got to be at the table making decisions for us when we are 86% black cities. We just left Greenville, Mississippi, where it's 80% black, 20% white. And the black leadership don't even show up to talk with their constituents when the two white ones do. So that just shows us, it's confirmation to me that throughout the state of Mississippi, we are definitely facing the same issues with poor leadership. Over the last 40 to 50 years, there's been poor leadership. They haven't been fighting for the masses of the black communities. That's why you see so much deprivation throughout the state of Mississippi. So many townships are just dilapidated and impoverished because of this poor leadership. But here in Holly Springs, if you look us up, Marshall County, we are a poor, impoverished community. But here in Holly Springs, we pay the second highest paid mayor in the state of Mississippi at $95,000 per year. That's the type of leadership, that's the type of black politician we got going on here in the new millennium. So I totally agree with the conversation. I'm really enjoying it.
Brother, let me ask you, how far is Holly Springs from like Mason, Tennessee, Covington, Nutbush? How far? Help me out with that, Mr. Burrell or brother. How far are you away from each other?
I'm really about 25 to 30 minutes from Mason.
Oh, okay.
It's a neighboring county.
Oh, okay.
You got to remember, Memphis, Tennessee is on the southernmost line of Tennessee and the northernmost line of Mississippi. Okay? We are right there on the line. Matter of fact, if you're in Memphis, you'll see a sign that says State Line Road. If you are not from Memphis, you won't know when you've gone from Tennessee to Mississippi. He is the next county over. This county is contiguous. It joins. A lot of people from Marshall County will be working at the Ford facility.
Correct.
Good. I'd like to put you two men in touch with one another because I don't know whether you had any meetings, Mr. Burrell, down in the Holly Springs area, but it might be beneficial with the brothers and sisters down there because they landowners too down in Mississippi.
Well, one of the things we're doing, and to your point, is that we have been trying to travel around the country to make a personal meeting, but because of the membership is growing, it is almost impossible for us to do. So we're getting ready to start holding Zoom meetings, online meetings with our members at least about twice a month. And this is a good time for me to give out our web address is www.bfaainc.com. BFAAINC.com. And so we're going to be holding Zoom meetings at least twice a month for the benefit. We've got a lot of members, as I said earlier, in California, in Chicago, in New Jersey area, D.C. area, people who moved away from Mississippi, moved away from Georgia, moved away from South Carolina, but they still have a vested interest and affinity, more importantly, to what's going on back in their home states. So we're going to increase our exposure by increasing our visibility, as it were, vis-a-vis the internet and other platforms now that will allow us to be able to touch more and reach out to more individuals who are like-minded vis-a-vis the internet.
What is that website again, please?
BFAAINC.com.
Thank you.
Thanks for your contribution, brother. Let's go to Memphis. Memphis, are you there, Memphis? Your line is open. I guess they're just listening. Let's go to, again, there's another caller, Holly Springs. Holly Springs, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, just in
I'm glad to be here. I was, you know, introduced in by my president Lowe down here in the NAACP, 5310 in Holly Springs, Mississippi, and I'm just glad to be a part of the call. And if something come up, I can, you know, speak on or whatever. But for right now, y'all got it. I'm just glad to be here.
Okay. Well, thank you for your contribution, bro. Let's go to Philadelphia. Let's go to New York City.
Yes, good evening. I have a question for your guest. While you have dealt with the Black Caucus, have they ever done anything to honestly assist you in getting the necessary loans, grants, money that the government was supposed to give you, help you fight back against these lawsuits and things of that nature? Because what I've noticed is that, you know, most of the Black congressmen that get into office are not wealthy, but it seems after being in office for 4 to 6 years, they become pretty wealthy. And, you know, for some reason, no one has ever really questioned it, because all you have to do is just look at Maxine Waters, who's been in office for quite a few years, how her wealth has increased, and her children and husband and I guess some of her other cronies, so you know she's helped them. But, you know, what have they honestly done for the Black farmers?
Can I answer? Well, I have to give them credit. The Black Caucus, particularly in the earlier years of this struggle in the late 90s and early 80s, they were somewhat active, not all of them. But some of them. But here, as the struggle continued over the last 10 years or so, we don't hear a lot from them. And that could be, you know, we maybe are not advocating and lobbying them as much as we should. But to a point that we made, most of them are aware of the fact that Black folks are losing land. But yeah. We've gotten probably more support from the National Black Caucus, notwithstanding, and albeit not as much as we want, than we've gotten from the locals, the state legislators, as it were. Keep in mind, you have more state legislators to the two brothers a minute ago in the state of South Carolina, in the state of Mississippi, basically where we have the greatest number of people in poverty, is where we have also, correspondingly, the highest number of African Americans at the state level. So, yes, we have, but to the extent that we are still behind the eight ball, it is not commensurate with the level of involvement that we believe the situation requires. The mere fact that you still have 620 counties in the South, and what we call the Black Belt, where you have the highest degree of poverty in the United States. There's more poverty in this Black Belt, which runs from Virginia all over to East Texas, than you have in all the other cities combined. And this is where you have a lot of our elected officials from the South, from Mississippi, from South Carolina and North Carolina. But I think I heard someone say the legacy groups, most of our elected officials are more or less accommodation oriented as opposed to economic development, to the point that I made earlier. How do you have, you got 150,000, according to research, you have 150,000 service stations in this country, okay? 99% of them are owned from individuals from Saudi Arabia, from the, that part of the world. Now, that's not by coincidence. If that's true in every state, you got these C stores, you have the hotels owned by individuals from India, you have the hair care industry, which
exclusively belonged, as it were, to black folks. So when the trading was made, these individuals couldn't come to this country without laws being passed. Mm-hmm. You and I just can't pick up and go to China and start opening up a barbecue stand just because we know how to cook, because grandma gave us a good recipe. So the government, the states, have to allow and did allow these individuals to come to this country to bring their wares, to bring their skills, and to bring their trades. The question is, for me, where was the African-American community representing black folk to say, you know what, now you have to give some of those service stations to black folk? Not to change the subject, but look at what went on in Detroit just this week with the Arab community there with respect to this no vote for Joe Biden, as it were. These people are using and flexing their political muscle. They haven't been here 50 years, but they know how to pool their resources and politically as well as financially to say, wait a minute, you're going to do for us. Black folks will not, and that wouldn't have happened in the African American community in Detroit. It wouldn't have happened in Philadelphia. It wouldn't have happened in New York. It wouldn't have happened in Memphis, okay? Our political leaders would not have taken that position, bro.
Sir, they, in all honesty, love two things. Their position that they've supposedly achieved and white folks. They're not going to do anything to jeopardize neither one of them. I mean, you just spoke about the assemblymen and other officials in the South. My question would be is, let's take South Carolina. Why can't the one who sold us out to Biden, Jim Clyburn, who, if the truth be told, all you have to do is look at his community and you could see that his community that he's represented for over 20 years is not flourishing. Why hasn't he been able to bring together the councilmen, the assemblymen, and any other black official office and come forth and deal with your issues? You know, the reality and the honest thing is to say that, you know, they really don't care about black people. They don't care about black people being in a position to compete with other nationalities. I mean, maybe this thing in Detroit will be a wake-up call. But if you have to be honest, and I know people get annoyed when I say this, and you had the brother 2 weeks ago call up and speak about black ownership, and I did a little research, and a lot of those companies that are billion-dollar, million-dollar companies, in all truthfulness, they don't have a majority black employment. Most of their workers are black, other nationalities, and whites. And when you look at the numbers, most of the time, the most you will get from black people is 25%. I'll leave you with this. There's a fundamental problem with black people of closing ranks, closing house, and dealing strictly with ourselves, taking care of ourselves, and figuring out how we can collectively come together to do for self. Because if we keep on going the way that we're going, we're going to perish. Because the thing is this, with Project 2025 coming into play, if the Democrats get in office, and it'll be more severe if the Republicans get in office, black folks are in trouble. And it's sad. But, right. You don't see it.
Thanks for your contribution, brother.
Thank you.
You know,
Richard, let me say this, then I'll pass it to you. Mr. Burrell has been saying that we can't, if we look at what's been happening, we can't depend on these other folks because they've been failing, that we have to do this ourselves. So what he's doing, along with in concert with the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association, what they've been fighting over 20 years, is organizing black landowners in that area to do for self. That's what he's saying, Richard. Go ahead. I didn't want to cut across you.
No. And I just wanted to emphasize that this is one of the greatest economic moments because, as Mr. Burrell said, we own, and I apologize, Mr. Burrell, to put myself on some land that I ain't got no title and can't even be an heir to, but we own the land. The industrial, the technological development has moved to where the people own the land. It's ripe for us. And we have to make the put, even if these here legacy organizations or this bad leadership, we know right now, and this ain't no new moment for us. We had this moment before. I think you described it, Mr. Burrell, when we bought the land. We knew what we had to do to actually create wealth. We didn't have anything. Now we are aware, and this, I mean, I hear young people, I hear other people who are individually successful. This moment, all eyes should be to the South and assisting this type of organizational network in order to capture and take advantage of this economic opportunity. What is it, $20 billion? And that ain't, I mean, that we ain't even talking about the, what they call it, the ripple effect of that.
Mm-hmm.
So the language is there that what we can do, we just have to say, do it. And from A to Z, I'm sorry.
Good,
well, if I might, there's an old saying, you got two types of energy, kinetic energy and potential energy. We exist in the potential. We've got a lot of energy. The question now is, do we have a managerial harness mechanism, if I might use a farm term, to pool, to get people who have the potential to come together to convert that potential into the kinetic. Kinetic energy is what moves. Potential energy is what's available. Strategically, we have it. It's available. But now we've got to come up with that mode, that tactic to move from now what? Potential to actually making it happen. And in our case, thank God, we have both.
There you go.
Mr. Burrell, listen, before you leave us this evening, because I know you said that you kind of transitioned from a lot of the tour that you were doing, moving around to doing it on Zoom because you can reach more people. Talk about the next Zoom meeting that you're having. The date, you already gave out the website, but you can give it out again.
We're having it this coming Tuesday, March the 5th at 1 p.m. Central Time, which would be 2 o'clock Philadelphia time. Go to www.bfaa.inc, and it will take you to this site that we're going to start holding now in real time. Because as I said, our membership is growing. We've got members all over the country. There is literally no way we can just travel. And a lot of our members are saying, wait a minute, is there another? We're basically doing what our members are asking us to do. We missed that meeting. Couldn't come to that meeting. Can you do something that will allow us? Now, even if we missed the meeting, we can archive it. So we're going into the 21st century, as it were, and the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association, www.bfaainc.com.
And Mr. Burrell, do you have to be an heir or a landowner to participate?
Oh, I'm so glad I got it. Excuse me, but I'm shouting. And the answer is no, because as we said, we're going to the next level. Remember, we use the phrase, again, tactics. The tactics, we're going from, as it were, from New York to L.A. That's the strategy. We're going from agriculture to generational wealth. Now we're going to, what modes are going to get us there? Farming was one mode, okay? Farming was one mode. There are other modes. I heard you mention, and we talked about it at other shows. We have a land problem in Philadelphia, in Detroit. Black folks are losing land. Mom and dad worked 50 years in the shipyard, paid for a house, and they died without a will in South Philly or in New York or in Boston or in Detroit or Chicago. And now that house is left up to five or six heirs, and it needs a roof. It needs flooring. It needs replumbing. And for whatever reason, the heirs are saying, I'm not going to spend my money and pay the taxes because I'm doing it for the benefit of everybody else. So we're saying it's time for us now to look at these other modes of how do we fix this problem. I mentioned incorporating is one mode. Land in the South is one mode. Real estate in the Midwest is another. Money is money is money. When other people come to this country, they don't just come to the South. Remember I said there are 150,000 service stations. So when people leave Saudi Arabia, all he needs to know is, where am I going? It's not going to matter if it's in New York or Texas or Tennessee. When the Koreans come over here for the hair care, they're not picky about where. If other folk can come to this country and look at the country as a quote-unquote whole, it's time for black folk who have been here 400 years to look at the United States as a whole. But at least we've got, to paraphrase the gospel again, we've got a city or at least a platform to start with. We've got our basically Jericho, as it were. It's where we're going to put up the first battle. West Tennessee, maybe. Mason, Tennessee, maybe is the model that we're going to use. We're going to perfect that model. And then when we see that we can perfect that model at Ford here in Tennessee, we're going to go over to Toyota in Alabama. We're going to go over to Nissan in Georgia. We're going to go to General Motors in Texas, so forth, so on, and so up too. But we have to start somewhere. So, yeah, if you're in New York, if you're in Texas, this is still a good platform, whether you are a farmer, because keep in mind, it's about property at this point. Farming was simply the best way for us to get property. But there are other means for us to get property. We can invest with people to get property. We can do a lot of other things to get what? Quote unquote property. And because of the way banking is set up now, I can put my money in a credit union in New York just as easily as I can here in Memphis by virtue of the internet. So black folks, if we talk about creating this new bank, you don't have to be in Tennessee to be a stockholder or to be a depositor in this bank. You mentioned churches a minute ago, Elliot. On Sunday morning, we'd like to think that every black bank in the country would say, wait a minute, we've made a decision. There is a group now that's creating a commercial bank. What's to stop us from taking 10% of the deposits on Sunday and putting them into this bank? As I said, we have the tools. We have the resources. It's a matter of a community and coming together under a philosophy of unity.
Mr. Burrell, thank you for your work. Thanks for being with us. You know, I just heard you say about archiving some of the meetings. If you send me, because there's no way that I could broadcast it live at 1 in the afternoon. But if you send me the... Well, I can get it from Ms. Rogers. If you send me the audio, I'll make sure that I archive it on the Time for Awakening website so that people can hear it and, you know, kind of get involved in the next meeting.
Thank you so very much. And we will send you also the links to future meetings and so that you can at least share those with your audience.
I'll do that.
And your listeners on a regular basis.
I'll do that. Thank you for your work, sir, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you again. God bless you.
Bye. All right.
Thank you, Brother Richard.
All right, take care now. Thank you.
Yes, bye.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, let's do this.
listening to Time for an Awakening.
Time for an Awakening.
With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today, 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. Abibitumi. Black Power. Abibitumi. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometsu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometsu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com. Abibitumi.tv. Abibitumitv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us.
In short, the lords of capital are creatures of U.S. imperial dominance. They go out of business when the empire does. The rulers are looking class death in the face, and it terrifies them. And when the lords of capital become frightened, they order their servants in politics and the war industries and the vast national security networks to take care of the problem by any means necessary. That means militarily encircling Russia and China, arming and mobilizing tens of thousands of jihadist terrorists in Syria in an attempt to repeat the regime change in Libya, waging a war of economic sanctions and low-level armed aggression against Iran, occupying most of the African continent through subversion of African militaries, escalating subversion in Latin America, and spying on everyone on Earth with a digital connection. All this to stop the clock that is ticking on U.S. and European world economic dominance.
The Organization of Afro-American Unity shall include all people of African descent in the Western Hemisphere. In essence, what it is saying, instead of you and me running around here seeking allies in our struggle for freedom in the Irish neighborhood or the Jewish neighborhood or the Italian neighborhood, we need to seek some allies among people who look something like we do. And once we get their allies, it's time out for you and me to stop running away from the wolf right into the arms of the fox, looking for some kind of help. Number two, self-defense. We assert the Afro-Americans' right to self-defense. The Constitution of the United States of America clearly affirms the right of every American citizen to bear arms. And as Americans, we will not give up a single right guaranteed under the Constitution. The history of unpunished violence against our people clearly indicates that we must be prepared to defend ourselves, or we will continue to be a defenseless people at the mercy of a ruthless and violent racist mob.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. Richard,
it was good having
Mr. Burrell with us today to give us an update to see what's been going on. You know, he gave an answer to your question, Richard, when you asked about the legacy organizations and all getting involved. And even when I mentioned about the politicians and clergy, he said that, the ball is in our court, that we have to do this ourselves, even if we can't get help from people that look like us. When he talked about the Black Bank wouldn't even give any money. But the good thing about it, Richard, because he said that some of the landowners have been incorporating and getting involved, and others are sitting back, I guess they're reluctant. The good thing about this, if it's a silver lining in that, Richard, is it's not like you're waiting on a job and, you move, you lose type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you still have the land, you can still make a move, even though you might be reluctant at the time, just as long as you don't sell the land.
Right.
If you still own the land, you can still make a move even at a later date. But I'm glad that a lot of the people are really, because his assistant, Ms. Rogers, sent me a lot of video and all about some of the meetings in other states, and they're very well attended. So the people are coming out because they realize that a lot of the land might be tied up and not necessarily tied up, just split up between different heirs, brothers and sisters, and some of them have passed. So it's good that we kind of take care of those loose ends.
And it's that way of just, incorporating to, you still have that entitlement. All you got to do is create that entity.
Exactly.
That's as he said, getting all of us to see that step one. But I want to back up just to say, we got to believe that we can create this economic dynamo in the South. No matter where, I don't know where everyone is for Time for Weakening audience, but this ain't something that just happened. You hear, even on Time for Awakening Media, people from the South who are actually engaged in Mississippi. You hear that the South, there are people on the ground And here is an opportunity. What happens when these corporations move down there? Who you think is going to be coming along with them? Like, let's not play with this thing.
Okay.
You know, I mean, when we talking about who is the labor who has no problem in relocating to follow where they already just made the deal of the type of package they will get. And you heard Mr. Burrell say how it'll work out in a sense once they move there, the people who have the land, the taxes go up, you don't have the income, then who gets displaced? Where is that place you're playing out already in the North and in the Midwest? Let us not play with this. This is our thing. Because I hear people they talk about generational wealth, and here is a wealth multiplier right in front of us, a political dynamo right in front of us, all who are believers. And we act like we're talking in abstraction, young and old.
Yeah, well, you know, Richard, we're going to stay abreast of this situation and get constant updates. In fact, Mr. Burrell said he's going to send me the calendar of the different events. So, I'm going to be letting the people know exactly what's going on. Because just like he said, when you asked that question about do you have to be a farmer or necessarily a landowner? And he said no. Because right. If you got expertise, Richard, you can go down there and get involved with some black people that are landowners.
And I have no problem with, in my mind, bringing up the SNCC model of how we should go. I'm not talking about doing the Liberia model. I'm saying about the SNCC model, where you go and you embed yourself with the people and the culture. You don't go like you know something, and the people don't know nothing. You know what I mean? Like, we can't be playing with this thing. Because these guys will erase us out. You hear him say, you got Japan, you got China, you got Korea, Ford. That, you know, I mean, you got these, they coming.
Yeah. And this system is bringing them in. You heard Sorrell say, when these people come in here, they don't necessarily know where they're going, and they don't care. They just know that they're going to be operating a business wherever they go.
And for people who might have missed it before, I don't really want to go down this road, but them white farmers, they did that. I mean, with the Blue Oval, didn't they incorporate?
Yeah.
Didn't they make the deal with the state? They had their individual land entities. They pulled them together, and they made a multiplier for that and parlayed that with the state. But the state going to take Mason and try to destabilize them and take over the whole county.
Exactly.
Come on, y'all.
When the white farmers incorporated, Richard, this is what Mr. Burrell was talking about when he said it's a lot of times it's blacks in the room, but they don't say anything. Right. Listen, those white farmers incorporated and the state pushed it through for them.
Right.
So evidently somebody had to know what was going on.
And Biden gives them $6 billion. The corporation.
They gave nine. It was $9 billion.
$9 billion. Y'all, we don't see this? We could talk, you know, like, it ain't, no. We may be scared. Black folks may be scared. But we can't overlook what these white boys are doing. I mean, they doing it and right in front of us. And it ain't because we scared. Because a lot of times the deals is being made, we don't even know they are. That's a plan.
Exactly.
You telling me they ain't got a plan for that whole southern region? Tennessee, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia? You think they ain't got a plan? They didn't already have the plan. That's why these corporations are moving down there? You think it's just happened sporadically? That's a part of a larger and economic development regional plan.
And believe me, that plan don't include black folks. But the good thing about it, Richard, is that we own a lot of that land in that area.
And we got to make sure we secure.
Exactly.
I want to make sure, because you see me, LA, you see me all the time. Y'all don't know. That's why I don't like to come. Y'all will never see me on this, because this thing is crazy. Because they think we ain't going to fight for it.
I know it.
They think they can run this thing, and all we'll do is sit back and be spectators.
And that's why you don't hear, and I'm glad that Mr. Burrell, he didn't bite his tongue. That's why you don't hear black elected officials or representatives saying anything about this. Nothing. Nothing, Richard.
And they got everybody.
That ain't a coincidence. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I'm just saying they got everybody distracted someplace else.
Yeah. To Trump, Biden. Yeah. Mm. Wow. When both of them is going to be giving money towards that project, Richard.
Here you go.
Whoever gets in, Trump or Biden, is going to be giving money and billions of dollars towards that project.
That whole region. You heard Judge Brown said that the whole thing that they have, the water line for the transportation. Not only do you have the land for the industrial, but they got also water transportation going into, coming. And I don't know geography like that, but from what I hear. That region, they got that waterway. Black folks is there. They may not be on a coast, but they there. So you got not necessarily with the land, but the water transportation outlet, which is a distribution system in and of itself that is a part of that economic development. That you either let them do it or And it ain't going to be like no negotiation. You're going to have to fight to get it. And that fight, before, we in the North should not just let the people in the South fight alone. And we act like we don't hear and don't know nothing until the last minute. And then we're going to say we're going to pump up our chest and say we're going to come and rescue y'all. Come on now. We can't do that. I'm sorry, y'all. Because I'm looking at history. I'm looking at our history. We have to look at our history from a strategic military perspective. And we've seen what we did before, and we've seen what happened. Because you think all that money, them white boys is just going to let it, just going to say, oh, y'all get y'all land and y'all do all this here, and we just going to, without a fight? Who thinks that? Am I going off, Elliot? Am I missing something?
No, this thing is, they already planning and strategizing right now as we speak, Richard. The thing is, you got the Black Farmers and Agricultural Association doing the same thing on their level. And the one thing that the ace in the hole is that they own the land, Richard. That's the ace in the hole. It's not like different city neighborhoods where a good percentage of the folks is renting from people that was slumlords or whatever. And then anytime they could tell you to get out or sell or whatever, and then you're on your own. It's different. It's a different dynamic. The folks down there own that land. It might be inactive. They might not be there. They might be in Philadelphia, less like you said, Los Angeles, Chicago. They might be in other places. But the ownership of the land is theirs. So he mentioned that one of the meetings is this Tuesday, I think he said, Richard, at 1 o'clock?
2 o'clock Eastern.
Well, 2 o'clock Eastern, yeah. And I'll get with him on that because I know I can't broadcast that early, but I'll make sure that it's up on the website where people can kind of access the information and hear it.
And those in your local area, let those local newspapers and bloggers and radio, let them know. We have to be the clarion call, the megaphone. We have to be that.
Yeah. What does that clip say? Minister Farrakhan says, we had a watchman on the wall. You are too. Mm-hmm. So the watchman alerts the people on what's going on outside that gate that's going to affect the people inside the gate.
Yeah.
Before we leave today, time for awakening Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Always interesting topics and dialogue on African Perspectives. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on in the week, Thursday from 9 to 10, Mississippi on the Move. That's the Black Liberation Movement in Mississippi. Brother Patrick Mumba, Brother Rodney Lowe, Brother Dubsack, Sister Crystal Denise, all the folks involved. Listen, tune in on Thursdays from 9 to 10, from 8 to 9 Central Time, from 9 to 10 on Eastern. A time for awakening from 8 until on Fridays. And I guess we got to get back on our grind, Richard, on that.
I will be. Yeah, and I hope the listening audience understand what's this told, what's been going on for me personally anyway.
Yeah, ain't no problem. But on Fridays from 8 until, time for an awakening. On Saturdays from 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa with Dr. Janine James. And on Sunday, time for an awakening is back from 7 until. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take. Problem.
to save the children. Soon it will be their chance to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. To save the children.